Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, absolutely amazing high school basketball performance last night. It's hard to believe. You'll have to hear the numbers for yourself. Did the federal scientists cook the books on global warming? Somebody says they did. We've got details. What are the 25 best places to live in the U.S.? We've got a list for you. And turns out your TV might be watching you while you watch it. That and more coming up on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. I guess I say welcome back because hopefully you were with us yesterday.
You're just only addressing our loyal listeners.
Only the loyal ones. Not the Johnny-come-latelys, but we welcome you as well. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today as well. And last night in high school basketball, an amazing, amazing feat of scoring. LaMelo Ball, and he is a younger brother of Lonzo Ball, who is a freshman at UCLA. And if you follow college basketball, he's just been playing tremendous there at UCLA. And so he'll, if he decides to go to the NBA, probably be top five pick somewhere. I like watching him play. I think he plays really well. He kind of reminds me of Jason Kidd, if people remember him from back in the day. So he's got two younger brothers, and the one that's, and they're both very good, but the one that's really getting attention is a sophomore, his sophomore brother, LaMelo Ball. He plays for the Chino Hills School in California. I believe their dad coaches the team. And so, you know, if you play basketball, you know, they talk about having a green light. Like, can you shoot or not shoot? And some guys kind of have a green light, or once in a while. The Ball brothers have the greenest of green lights. They can shoot anytime they want.
The dad doesn't want to cause any strife within the family by telling them to stop.
They have, I've watched a few of their highlights on YouTube. I haven't seen like a full game, but they have no conscience, as it says, when it comes to shooting. And they'll pull up. I mean, the LaMelo Ball, the sophomore student, he has pulled up and hit a half court shot in a game.
Just for no reason.
For no reason.
Oh, come on.
It wasn't like the end of a court. He's like, I'm just going to pull up and let this thing rip.
That's slightly absurd.
In most cases, your coach would be like, I've got a warm seat on the bench for you here.
Whether you make it or not, right. The coach would be upset about that.
Yeah. So they're not worried. They're going to shoot, shoot, shoot. So last night, LaMelo Ball scores 92 points in a high school game. That's like in just over 30 minutes. Mm. 92 points.
How many shots did he take?
I've got the stat line for you.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this.
Here it goes. Chino Hills standout LaMelo Ball, the younger brother of UCLA point guard Lonzo Ball, dropped 92 points in a 146-123 win over Las Asis High School on Tuesday night. Hopefully I got your name right. Las Asis. If I didn't, I apologize. They say as if his point total wasn't impressive enough, Ball was fairly efficient on the night when he scored 63 points in the second half. According to a box score provided by Southern California News Group, Tommy Kiss, Ball shot 30 of 39 on two-point attempts. A lot of layups. 7 of 22 on threes, and he was 11 of 14 from the line. Added 7 assists and 5 rebounds for good measure. So, I mean, that really, when you look at the twos especially, that's extremely efficient. On the threes, that's not bad. I mean, it's a little under 30%, I guess. But, you know, I guess you can forgive it. 30 of 39 on twos.
Yeah, and probably they weren't all layups. So he's probably making a lot of mid-range jump shots as well. Probably some dunks and some layups too. But that's smart shooting when you take a lot more inside the arc than you do outside.
I think if I saw correctly, they said he had about 40 of those points in the fourth quarter. You know, so that's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody that's played basketball, you know, you've had those days where you're like, hey, it's all going in, you know, it's just really working for me. but 92 points. I mean, I wonder if he's at home thinking, boy, if I just hit a couple more shots, I could have got 100. It was close.
Well, it seems like people like that would never be satisfied, because obviously the fact that they won by 23 points and yet he still has 92 points himself, he was trying to get as many as possible.
Yeah, he's got a kind of an unorthodox shot. It's not probably fundamentally exactly right. It's kind of this weird, like, he puts his hand under the ball and at the side, sort of. Mm. And his brother does the same thing, but they're both very effective. And their dad, I mean, he's raised them to play, and they're going to probably get to the NBA, at least a couple of them. So he's got a brother that's a senior at the same high school, I believe, and he's very good, but still, his older brother's better and his younger brother's better, and he's in the middle. Like, come on. It's like Blake Griffin's brother, right?
Taylor Griffin?
Yeah, your brother's an NBA superstar, and you're like, not quite good enough. Frustrating.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually heard that the main Thunder reporter for ESPN, Royce Young, used to be a ball boy or a bat boy on Taylor and Blake Griffin's T-ball team.
Oh, wow.
So when they were all really young, obviously Royce Young must be a little bit younger than those two. And so he was kind of with the team, and then they grew up to be pretty famous.
Right. Yeah, some guys, they just make it and others don't. And it's a lot of times it's a difference of just a couple of inches or a little bit of athleticism or just having that it factor. You know, some guys have it, some guys don't. And so I always kind of think about those guys that are almost good enough, but not quite. That's got to be really hard.
Taylor Griffin was a really solid player for Oklahoma University in college. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's just not freakishly athletic like his brother Blake is.
A couple inches shorter, not quite the same athlete. And he's been at least tried out by a few NBA teams,
right,
but he's never stuck as far as I know. So it's hard because you're almost good enough to make a career out of it, but maybe not. And so that would be hard to give up and go and just, you know, say, well, I'm going to get a regular job because you're almost good enough.
Well, if you were almost good enough for the NBA, though, there are international leagues that you could try out. Or what's that big three league that they're making with a bunch of former NBA stars?
The 3-on-3 league with Allen Iverson. Yeah, there's a developmental league and different things. But overseas, they'll pay you better. The
right.
developmental league, they don't get paid a lot. And there's some guys that used to do okay in the NBA, and then they kind of, I guess their run ended, and then they've gone to China and just score a ton of points, and they make a lot of money, and they're kind of celebrities over there. So if you don't mind, you know, going to a different culture and living in a different place, you can really do pretty well.
Yeah, pretty much a middle of the road NBA player could become one of the best players elsewhere and then make a lot more money just for being one of the stars in another place.
It does show you how good they are as athletes, because if they're, like you say, middle of the road, or they're kind of at the end of their career, and they can just go dominate another international league. And, I mean, it's not like the people playing in the China League are scrubbies.
No.
They're very good players. It just shows you the level of athleticism and competition that's out there, and it's pretty high.
Yeah, the Euro League is actually quite impressive. They always seem to be producing a lot of NBA players. Guys play there for years, and then finally they're mid-20s, and they finally come to the NBA.
Yeah, I think they get to start playing in those leagues when they're younger, and so they're playing against, if they're a teen, you know, they're playing against full-grown men, and that gets them ready for some of the other rigors of professional sports. So, well, congratulations to this kid, though, LaMelo Ball. It's a great last name. I mean, if you're going to be a basketball player, 92 points in a high school game.
I've never heard the first name either, so pretty unique either way.
Yeah, they have unique names, unique looks, unique ways of playing. So they're kind of stars in the making, because you can identify. Like, the guy's got kind of an interesting haircut.
Mm.
And so you see him, and you're like, oh, that's that guy. Like, even if you don't know who it is, you recognize, like, his look and such. And you kind of need that, you know, if you're going to be the standout. So either you're going to be really good, or you're just going to be the goofy-looking guy. In this case, he's the really good guy.
Yeah, he's good and maybe slightly goofy as well, enough to stand out.
Yeah, so pretty interesting there. It always piques my interest when you see something like that. Here's a report from Fox News. Of course, climate change is a hotly debated topic. And this headline says that federal scientists cooked climate change books ahead of Obama presentation, according to a whistleblower. Akio Obatis, they say, brushed aside inconvenient data that showed a slowdown in global warming in compiling an alarming 2015 report that coincided with the White House participation in the Paris Climate Conference, a whistleblower is alleging. And so really, when they did this report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, it was a 2013 report, they concluded that global temperatures had shown actually a smaller increase from 98 to 2012 than any similar period over the past 30 to 60 years. That's what the data showed. So it's actually slowing down. As they say, from any similar period over the past 30 to 60 years. But there was a blockbuster June 2015 paper by a team of federal scientists led by Thomas Carl, published in the journal Science in June 2015, and later known as the Pause Buster paper, sought to discredit the notion of a slowdown in warming. They said their new analysis suggests that an apparent hiatus may have been largely the result of limitations in past data sets, and that the rate of warming over the first 15 years of this century has, in fact, been as fast or faster. So they said, well, we're just missing data, and that's why it appears that climate change has slowed down, and therefore it's actually sped up. But this whistleblower came out and said that they just ignored some of the data to make it look like climate change is accelerating just before the White House went to the Paris climate change and so on and so forth. So, of course, they deny that they changed the reports. It's going to be an argument there. But it's at least interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if the books were cooked a little bit.
There have been quite a few accusations of that that I've heard of as well. All you would really have to do even is cherry pick a couple surveys that fit your point of view or a couple of studies. And that does seem to be something that is happening. It's also amazing to just see people who are ardent supporters of climate change being the number one threat in the world. They'll just call you a climate denier, like that's the worst insult they could ever think of. They really take the subject seriously. To be clear, though, everyone who has any appreciation for science knows that very, very slowly the temperature is going up by maybe a degree over the course of decades or a century. That is true, but people just disagree on how dangerous this is. That's really the only disagreement.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know what all the reasons might be. Obviously, maybe some pollution. There's a lot more people on the Earth.
Yeah.
You ever put more people in, like, your dining room than you usually have?
It gets hot
quick.
It really does.
People are breathing, and I don't know if that's the issue or not. But what is very interesting with the climate change debate is that people on both sides will be very strong in their thought on it. But who's really sitting there, number one, looking at all of the data, and number two, having any knowledge of really how to read it? So to be so strong in the opinions, it's all based on something that somebody else said, you know, an expert. I remember President Obama used to say that if they questioned something, whether it was climate change or any sort of policy, he'd basically say, I got folks working on it that are a lot smarter than you and me, so let's just, you know, go with that. Well, but we have to take your word for it. How do we know that that's true? So with the climate change thing, you know, how does anybody really know, especially if they're just messing with the data one way or the other?
Yeah, especially when everything seems to be politicized or driven by ideology. If scientists go into a project with bias, obviously they're going to find whatever they were looking for because they are going to discard all the evidence that disproves their hypothesis and then keep the stuff that does prove it, apparently. That's what has been happening, it looks like, especially when you just think of the priorities. To say that global warming is so dangerous that you know, it's more of a threat than Iran obtaining the nuclear bomb. Anyone with sense knows that's not true,
right?
Because global warming is going to take hundreds of years to really even have much of a noticeable impact. I mean, at this point, we're not even really seeing the ice caps melt like we used to hear from people like Al Gore, who have, by the way, gotten really rich off of his big movie about climate change. And I heard he might even be coming out with another one. Mm-hmm. Here he is flying around the world on private jets. He has a mansion that's built like right on the coastline, where if he were so concerned with rising tides, he would not have built his house right there.
That's a good point. Yeah, his carbon footprint, as they say, is pretty big. It's bigger
than
most.
He should cut back. Maybe kind of practice what he preaches there.
Bigger than most. So anyway, that's kind of an interesting story. They think they might have cooked the books. That happens in a lot of cases, even, you know, as far as science. I mean, we had a story a while back about how some of the companies that produce different products with a lot of sugar in it paid, quote-unquote, experts to come to a certain conclusion. Or people that, you know, their business requires experts to say something, they'll pay experts. Experts get paid. And if you know that the person that's paying the bills kind of wants a certain result or a certain a finding from your study, you know, maybe some people would say, no, I won't do that. But that money's a pretty strong pull, or favoritism, or recognition or something like that.
And usually a lot of money is at stake when people are paying for their own special interest. They'll pay a lot of money to have their own interest backed up with supposed proof, because then they stand to make a ton more money off of it. We were talking not too long ago about a study about sugar not being as bad for you as we thought, and it was funded by the sugar producing industry.
Right.
That doesn't hold a whole lot of credibility. If someone anti-sugar produced that, then everyone should be listening to it.
Right. So take it for what it is. It's cold today, for whatever that's worth,
here, exactly.
Here at our studios in central Oklahoma.
That's actually the funniest part about people who are so obsessed with climate change, is that the people who kind of want to get a rise out of them, every time there's a cold day or there's some sort of a blizzard, they say, oh, what about climate change? And they just sort of right. get under their skin a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of those never-ending debates, and people are going to keep going both ways about it. And there was those tornadoes last night in New Orleans. I just saw a little bit of the headlines about it. Pretty devastating. It did a lot of damage. And so that was right in the same area where Hurricane Katrina was, I guess, mm-hmm. roughly. So they had some footage of that. Really pretty devastating tornadoes last evening, I guess it was. Well, Grant, you ever get the feeling sometimes if you're watching TV, do you ever wonder, is that TV watching me?
Well, actually, there's a chance. Usually I think of it with like a camera. If I'm on video camera,
yeah.
I'm like, well, what if someone just taps into this?
Sure. Well, this did happen, actually, not in the sense of maybe like looking at you with a camera, but tracking what you're watching. This is from Ars Technica. Vizio smart TVs tracked viewers around the clock without consent, and they got busted for doing it. The manufacturer will pay $2.2 million and delete data to settle privacy invasion charges. According to a complaint filed Monday by the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, internet-connected TVs from Vizio contained ACR, short for Automated Content Recognition Software. Without asking for permission, the ACR code captured second-by-second information about the video the TVs displayed. The software collected other personal information and transmitted it, along with the viewing data, to servers controlled by the manufacturer. Vizio then sold the data to unnamed third parties for purposes of audience measurement, analysis, and tracking. So they were watching what you were watching and telling people about it.
That seems to be something that has come up in a lot of industries where, you know, if you sign up with, you know, for a deal with some company, they now have to explicitly say, we will not share your information with any other company. Or
we'll sell it. We won't share it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like we're giving it away here. But that just seems like what happens now. People are getting upset that all of a sudden after signing up for something, they then get a bunch of junk mail as well. That's because the one company you signed up with gave your information to other people.
Right. Yeah, you get the phone calls, yeah. Telemarketers and people getting your information all sorts of ways. You know how it is if you're on the internet and you happen to look for something. I'm interested in buying a new bike. Well, next time you open up your browser, you're going to have a bunch of bike ads. I mean, they, right. they know what you're looking at and where you're going. So it is interesting. I suppose it is one of those things where if people aren't alerted to it, they're upset. It probably doesn't matter so much if you're watching things that are above board. People would probably get a little more nervous if they're watching something they would be embarrassed about or yeah. a little bit ashamed of. I think that's where it gets a little more dicey.
Well, that's where you always wonder, you know, at what point do they share your information so that they can then sell more products to you? And at what point could some of that possibly be used as blackmail. That's where it does get to be a bit unnerving for a lot of people. I don't think people usually care too much if they get a couple more emails just because they signed up for something. But if they just know that people you don't have any connection to know everything about you, that is a bit concerning.
Yeah, there's been that whole blackmail system where right. if people were doing some pretty inappropriate things on the internet, they would film them doing them, and then you know send them a message and say, we've got this video of you, and we are going to send it to all these people unless you pay us this much money. Now that would never be an issue if you weren't involved in bad stuff on the net. So that's what it really comes down to. It's personal, you know, control there and not getting into some of those things. Because if somebody says, you know, I'm going to tell people you watched football, I'd be like, fine, I'll tell them myself, you know. But if it's something inappropriate, well, that's where it gets a little dicier. You know, speaking of telemarketers, I got a telemarketer call the other day, and the number came up, and I wasn't sure. I didn't know it, but I thought, well, I might. Who knows, you know? So I answered it, and it was really weird. There was a lady, and I said hello, and there was a little bit of a pause, and she's like, oh, hello, sorry, I dropped my phone, and she was saying this stuff, and I was like, what? And my wife was in the room, and she could overhear it, and she said, that's a telemarketer. She said that's their new, they did the same thing to her. Like, it sounds, they have it set up so it sounds like it's a real person, but it's actually a recording, but they kind of fumble through the beginning of the call to make you think it's like a real person. So pretty sneaky.
Wow, they're really stepping up their game there.
Yeah.
Because most people just ignore telemarketers as it is. I'm a pretty easy sell, personally. Usually I'll hear out the person who's selling something about half the time. I'll probably buy it. I'm a bit of a sucker.
Wow, well, now you're going to get a lot more phone calls.
Yeah,
I might call you. sir, what could I interest you in? Hey, I know you. Yeah, so they must work on some level because they keep doing it. So I'm assuming some people, you know, do buy the stuff.
It's all about what you offer. If you have a pretty good deal going on, or if I have a few minutes anyway, I might as well just take a random call. It's kind of interesting sometimes.
Yeah, well, they definitely do call. It seems like it kind of goes in waves. But then you start to recognize the numbers, like, oh, I don't know anybody, you know, from that state calling me at this time. Mm-hmm. And so that does happen. Here's an interesting one from CNN.com. A Texas daycare's message to parents, get off your phone. They put a sign up in their window of their daycare to parents, and it was pretty bold. Here's what it says. This is what their sign said. It says, get off your phone, 4 exclamation points. It says, your child is happy to see you. Are you happy to see your child? We have seen children trying to hand their parents their work they completed, and the parent is on the phone. We have heard a child say, mommy, 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 and the parent is paying more attention to their phone than their own child. It is appalling. I agree with them, but that's a pretty bold thing to put on your door when you're telling that to your paying clientele. But I think it's true.
Yeah, it's like a stiff slap in the face, but it is absolutely true. You know, kid hasn't seen their parents all day. They want to impress them by whatever they've been doing, and then the parents don't even realize their kids are right next to them. So it can be a problem. Maybe it should have been more pleasantly worded, possibly maybe more of a suggestion instead of a command, because people would respond better to that.
Well, they missed the mark because they should have just texted it to them.
It shows up on their phone. Oh, sorry.
Then they would have read it. They won't read this.
They're not even going to notice it. They're not looking up from their phones.
No. No, I was talking to somebody the other day. We were talking about just driving and how very often people just drift into your lane while they're on their phone, and then they look up and then kind of nonchalantly get out of the lane. And very rarely do they seem startled. Some do, and they kind of give you the, oh, sorry. But in some cases, they're just like, meh. And it's amazing. I mean, it's not that far away from a head-on collision sometimes. And it happens a lot.
It does happen a lot. And that's pretty much a giveaway that they're on their phone and not falling asleep. Because if you fall asleep, you jolt awake whenever you start drifting. if you're on your phone, you're like, oh, whoopsie. You're still conscious. You still were choosing to do what you did. You were still under control. So that does give it away. That's the frustrating part, is that you know that they're on their phone. You know they're probably watching a movie while they're driving, something ridiculous like that. And it just, it's really dangerous.
It is. Checking emails, checking texts. All those things.
The movie would probably be the safest thing you could do, honestly. Obviously, if you're trying to type something on a little phone with a touch screen, it's complicated, especially when you're driving a moving vehicle.
Yeah, for sure. CNBC has a list here of the 25 best places to live in the U.S. in 2016. See if you agree. Number 25, Omaha, Nebraska. You ever been up there?
I have one time. It's impressive. That's where they have the College Baseball World Series.
Oh, yeah. I think I stopped. I don't know if I stopped in Omaha. I might have. One time, I think I did. Just briefly. 24. Yeah, I have no comments about that. I think I briefly stopped there, but then I was like, well, no, maybe I didn't. And then I thought, who cares? Number 24, Richmond, Virginia. That's one of the best places to live, they say. 23, San Antonio, Texas. Mm. I like San Antonio. Riverwalk's nice.
It's really nice. It's at least a really nice tourist destination. We probably wouldn't know much about living in most of these places, right. But they do have some attractions there in San Antonio.
Yeah, and who else thinks that the Alamo is a lot smaller when you get there than what you thought it was going to be?
It really is.
Yeah.
It's a lot smaller, and it just shows you, you know, they were being besieged there, and they somehow held it off in that tiny building.
Yeah, I think it's because in the movies, it's out in the middle of a field, and it's like this big thing, and then it's like right almost downtown, and it's this little deal. I'm like, really? That's it?
Yeah, today it's dwarfed by skyscrapers or whatever else.
Yeah, so it was really neat, but I think probably everybody has that sort of like, what, that's it? Number 22, San Diego, California, one of the best places to live in the U.S. in 2016. 21, Sarasota, Florida. 20, Houston, Texas. Houston's, man, if you go through there, some of the highways are just amazing. I think it was like 6 lanes, if I remember correctly, and I had to get all the way over. And it was almost bumper to bumper, and we're all doing about 80. And I'm like, what? It's one of those where you have to, you can't think too much about what you're doing, because you just freak out.
Right.
Just keep on going.
Yeah, they do have some majestic highways down there. And it's a really beautiful city as well. Mm-hmm. It just depends. Obviously, every big city has a bit of traffic. But if you go at the right time, especially, you can get moving pretty fast.
I've said this before. Houston is the only city that I've seen one building that was a combination Jamba Juice Starbucks.
That's right.
That's
epic.
That's you stop and take note when you see something like that.
I'm coming back.
Number 19, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Number 18, Madtown, Madison, Wisconsin. That's what they call it. Number 16, San Francisco, California. 15, Dallas, Fort Worth, a lot of these cities in Texas. Dallas is nice in some parts. Number 14, Charlotte, North Carolina. 13, Nashville, Tennessee. I've been through Nashville, didn't really stop in the city, and I wasn't really all that impressed, but again, I never got into the city, really.
Right. I've also been through Charlotte a couple times, and that's really beautiful, although they recently had riots, so I don't know how nice it is now.
Yeah, like anything, it depends on where you go in the city.
Yeah.
Number 11, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Number 10, Salt Lake City, Utah. Number 9, Des Moines, Iowa. That's kind of interesting, I guess, because it's affordable. That's one of the main reasons. Iowa's a little, you know, it's a little more of a barren state, I guess, a little flatter. Corn.
Yeah, a lot of corn, and it's just peaceful out there. It's not too crowded. Mm-hmm. I think it's a beautiful place.
Number 8, Boston, Massachusetts. If I had a Boston accent, I would have said it that way, but I don't. By the way, Tom Brady, his wife asked him, the supermodel, she asked him if he would retire, and he said, sorry, babe. I'm having too much fun.
I'm the greatest, but I'm not the greatest by far yet.
He wants to keep playing. Number 7, Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. Number 6, Seattle, Washington. That's a nice place up there. Number 5, Fayetteville, Arkansas. Which is kind of funny to me. No offense to Fayetteville, but if somebody said, hey, look, you can take a week. Where do you want to go? Fayetteville, Arkansas, or Seattle, Washington? I'd be like, I'll go to Seattle. Like, I wouldn't even think twice about it. Maybe I'd be wrong on that. Maybe Fayetteville would be better, but I don't know.
I joked before about going to, like, Wichita, Kansas for, like, my honeymoon or something. And it sounds like a joke, but a lot of places, especially in the heartland, they they're just nice places.
Yeah, they're okay. If you find a nice little nook, you know, yeah. There's some nice stuff out there. I mean, the coastal cities, you just have the ocean and the mm-hmm. mountains, and that's exciting. Number four, Washington, D.C., which really, historically, I mean, it's great. It's a beautiful city in parts. I went there a few years ago, really enjoyed the parts that I saw. And I was talking to somebody later that lives in D.C., I think it was on that trip even. And I said, oh, you know, this is neat. I said, this is a really nice town. And they looked at me and they're like, are you serious? I'm like, well, yeah. But I was in like the touristy spots and I think they were, they thought I was being sarcastic. But I was like, no, I thought it was nice. Number three, San Jose, California. Do you know the way to San Jose?
No.
That famous 70s song? Number two, it's never been answered. Number two, Denver, Colorado. And number one, Austin, Texas.
Wow.
Yeah. Austin is described as like the Portland of Texas. It's kind of a little different, a little artsy, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. I mean, that does tend to happen in a lot of really liberal areas. At least they're physically attractive areas. I don't know about the ideology of the people, but usually if you can avoid those discussions, you could probably have a pretty good time.
You ever been to Austin?
I haven't been to Austin, but I've been to San Antonio, Houston, Dallas, yeah. A lot of places throughout Texas.
Yeah, I think I've made all of those except Austin. Yeah. I haven't been to Austin. I might have to check it out sometime. I watch Austin City Limits sometimes. When I was a kid, that used to be on, you know, it was on TV, and we used to have it on in the house sometimes. And if you've ever seen that show, especially back, say, in the 80s, like it's inside, but it's got like this big mural of the downtown behind them. And as a kid, I was always confused by that. Like, I'm like, are they outside? Like, I couldn't figure out where they were. I thought, well, are they on, like, the roof of a building? But I think it was just a big, like, picture in the background. It confused me as a child.
Yeah, that would be confusing. They just had the whole show in front of this mural?
Sort of, yeah. In the background, there was, like, the city. And I think it was just, like, a big picture of the city. But I was like, are they outside? Because it's dark. You can't, because they have yeah. the lights down. But they're obviously in some sort of a complex there.
That's funny. So, you know, that's how it is. Like on a lot of TV interviews where the guy who's a guest, you know, a guest commentator comes on and he's got this vast expanse behind yeah. him, this beautiful city view or ocean view or something. And you never know if it's just a green screen with random graphics put up behind him or if that's actually the view right behind him.
Yeah, sometimes they do it for real. You know, like some of the news shows, they'll get a shot with a Capitol behind him. And then at the end, they'll like thank the building, like thank you to the whatever law firm for letting us use your room here. And so I think that's kind of neat. When it's the pictures, sometimes it's kind of neat. It is funny how those interesting things like that stick with you from being a kid. There was one other thing. I remember watching a weather forecast, and the weatherman actually, and this is like early 80s, he actually took out a marker and like wrote on the weather board. It was like a board, and I'd never seen it before. And I remember watching the weather for years afterward, hoping, like, will they use the marker again? And they never did. It's just a really vivid memory of like, oh, they actually wrote on the thing. Must have been old technology or something.
Yeah, they probably told him not to do that again.
Don't write on the board.
You broke it.
Yeah. It's funny, by the way. I'll give you a little insight into some of that because I worked at one of those TV stations. They do the green screen, you know, the green wall, and they do the weather and everything. And what they're looking at on the side is they're looking at a monitor which shows them what we're seeing at home, which is them and then the graphic because it's just a green wall behind them. Mm-hmm. So when they're pointing, they're looking at the monitor to see that they're pointing to the right thing. But it takes a while to get good at that because you're, you know, the way it looks and where you're pointing.
Is that the opposite kind of?
Sort of.
Yeah.
And so when you have a new weather person come in, they practice. And so you set everything up when you're just running like network programming. And it's, you watch them and they're trying to, they'll like point, but they'll point to the wrong thing. And so they have to practice and get ready for it. So I'm sure the tapes of some famous weathermen are out there doing that in their early days. I'm going to sell them, put them on YouTube
Where
or something.
Is this thing? He's
yeah.
pointing all over the screen.
Pointing at the wrong places and yeah, all that stuff. So that's a little inside scoop for you today for those that are interested. Here's a flight attendant doing something pretty epic. This is from the Telegraph. A flight attendant rescues teenage girl from a human trafficker. This is pretty cool. Terrible that it happens, but good that she stepped up. A flight attendant working for Alaska Airlines has been praised after describing how her quick thinking allowed a young passenger to escape the clutches of a human trafficker. Her name is Sheila Fedrick. I want to say Frederick, but there's no R. It's Frederick. 49 was working on a flight from Seattle to San Francisco in 2011 when she noticed a teenage girl around 14 traveling with a well-dressed older man. And what made her kind of stop and think about it was the girl didn't look good. Looks like she had been through something tough. And here's this well-dressed older guy, and this girl looks a little ragged. And so she thought, something's not right about this. Which makes me wonder how often they see things like that. But, you know, what are you going to do? But they probably do notice things from time to time. She was speaking to WTSP, the station up there, I guess. And she said that she tried to speak to the pair, but the girl remained silent and the man responded defensively. And so speaking under her breath, the flight attendant instructed the girl to visit one of the plane's restrooms, where she left a note for her on the mirror. The girl left a message in the same place confirming that she needed help. So the flight attendant informed the pilot, who alerted police, and officers were waiting at the terminal when the plane arrived in San Francisco. And it was subsequently discovered that the girl was the victim of human trafficking. The flight attendant said, "I've been a flight attendant for 10 years, and it's like I'm going all the way back to when I was in training. I could have seen these young girls and young boys and didn't even know. If you see something, say something," she said. And she's still in touch with the girl, who is now attending college, because she put her phone number on the note that she left for her, and then the girl memorized it and called her later and thanked her, you know, and they've had a bit of a friendship since then. But in 2016, 2,000 people were arrested for human trafficking, 400 victims freed, but you have to wonder how many aren't caught. So it's kind of a tough situation because you would want to say something, but at the same time, if it's not what it appears, you could get in trouble, I would think, too. So it's kind of a tough deal.
Yeah, I mean, that does seem pretty difficult, and those are some pretty low numbers of people caught and released as well. So hopefully people are alert about that, because obviously the girl in that situation would not be screaming "help me" necessarily. Right. She'd be terrified if no one helped her and then the man was angry with her later.
Yeah, it's got to be a really, really strange situation, because you would think that you, in a public place, you would just start yelling like, "Hey, you know, this guy's stealing me," or whatever. But they don't in most cases. And I guess they're just terrified, or, you know, there must be some reason that they don't. And, of course, if you haven't been in that situation, it would be hard to know why. But, yeah, it's good that this flight attendant noticed that and did say something. Yeah, if you work in an airport or anything like that, you must just see all kinds and wonder, like, what's going on with these people, you know? And not that it's always a bad thing, but I mean, I know when I fly, you see all kinds and you think, I wonder what's going on over here. But
yeah,
most cases, you just go about your business.
Yeah, that's the tough part, is obviously there's a fine line between minding your own business and helping someone who needs help, but you're not really sure if they do. You know, that would be a pretty tough moral dilemma for most people.
Yeah. So kind of nice and terrible story in a sense, but really, really nice that she was able to help the girl out, and that's a pretty great thing.
So that happened back in 2011,
yeah.
And it's just now kind of...
Right, I think it's just kind of... I'm not exactly sure why it's coming up now, other than I think it went to court recently, and so they're kind of testifying about what happened and so forth. But, you know, you don't a lot of times hear too much about how those people get caught, and... the fact that the flight attendant did it and was quick thinking about it really is pretty, pretty great on her part. That's a lot of the job for flight attendants, the safety, you know, and keeping your eye out for different things. And in today's society, you have to watch for all kinds of things, terrorism. But again, you can't like accuse anybody. Hey, you look suspicious. You know, well, mind your own business. You know, flight attendant, you're going to get fired.
Yeah.
So you have to be really careful and use a lot of wisdom.
Well, especially today, they could get arrested for like 30 years for profiling or discriminating or something like that, even if they're just trying to be cautious. There is a special kind of sick to a child trafficker, though.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt overjoyed when you said that guy got caught.
Yeah, it's just terrible. You know, I was on a flight one time. This is probably 10 years ago, flying out to Los Angeles. And there was a girl next to me. I mean, she was, I don't know, 20, mid-20s or something. And, she was looked like she was having a hard time. Like, I don't know if she didn't like flying or she didn't feel good or something. She was just a little erratic, kind of getting up a lot, sitting down a lot, like putting her head down on the seat in front, like, and just kind of just looked like she was out of it. So it was a little different. But and at that time, that was when they were really cautious, like, turn your phones off. That was back in the flip phone era. And she just pulled out her phone in the middle of the flight and just turned it on and started doing stuff. And I was like, what is she doing? And she was kind of erratic anyway. So I made eye contact with the flight attendant, the guy. He was a guy. And I'm kind of like, like, moving my head, like, check this lady out, see what she's doing. And he's looking at me like, what? You know? And I so finally he came over and he just told her, oh, you got to turn your phone off and stuff. And there was no big deal. But I'm like, I don't know what she's doing. You know, because it was such a big deal not to turn your phone on, and the fact that she did it and was just being erratic. And you just don't know. You don't know what's going on.
Well, she just seems really nervous, like, yeah, she was about to do something insane.
Right.
Yeah, obviously, that's going to alarm some people. If she has nothing that she's planning, she should probably stop acting so suspiciously, yeah, for the sake of everybody else.
There was another one, I guess, around the same time. I was on the aisle, and there was a guy across the aisle from me, and as soon as we take off and the seatbelt sign unfastens, like, he is, or, you know, it goes off, he is out. I mean, he's like, gone to the bathroom. Okay, whatever. He's got to go to the bathroom. I mean, he didn't come back for a while. You know, it's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And I'm kind of looking around. I'm like, what's the guy doing? You know, you start thinking about it. And he came back and it was fine. But we just live in that time. You just don't know what people are doing. And so if you see something that's a little out of the ordinary, it does make you nervous, for sure.
Yeah, it's the effect of, you know, so many terrorist attacks and also so many highly publicized stories of people with mental health problems. You just never really know what people are thinking or what their background might be. And you're here with all these complete strangers, and you all have to just travel in a confined location to the same place, so you don't really know who those people are.
Yeah. There was a lady one time, too, that I felt bad for. Clearly, she was just afraid of flying. And we were taken off, and I thought she was going to hyperventilate. I mean, she was like, I don't know. She was trying to go through, like, run through stuff in her head to, like, try to keep herself calm. And she's just, you know, you feel bad for him. And then I started getting nervous. I'm like, why am I nervous? I'm not nervous, but you're making me nervous. It's always interesting when you go flying. We like to talk about coffee sometimes on this show, mainly because I like it. I don't think you like it that much, do you?
I like it, but it's one of those rare things for me.
Not a thing
every
for you.
Week,
yeah,
or two, maybe once.
Yeah. Here's a story from the "Of course this is happening" segment. There's a company rising up to fight Starbucks. This is from Business Insider. This veteran-run coffee company wants to take on anti-American Starbucks to make coffee great again. It says, as Trump supporters threaten to boycott Starbucks, the company, Black Rifle Coffee Company — how many shots do you want? We're talking coffee now, right? is seizing the opportunity to win over coffee drinkers who support the president. We're even becoming divided in our coffee now. Soon after Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz announced plans to hire 10,000 refugees in response to President Trump's executive order barring people from seven majority Muslim countries, the BRCC, Black Rifle Coffee Company, made a promise of its own. They said, well, the company, which sells coffee blends, monthly coffee club subscriptions, and Java-centric apparel and gear, posted that it would hire 10,000 veterans, just as the pro-Trump movement to boycott Starbucks gained steam. And so they say, you want to hire the immigrants, we're going to hire the veterans. So take your pick. Which one do you want?
Well, that's a good call. That's a pretty good counterpunch there. I was thinking recently, we always used to think, man, these wealthy guys with their businesses, they only just care about money. And that's probably good for the economy and everything, but it'd be nice if they, you know, seemingly cared about other things. But now I don't really like seeing people with just spouting off political beliefs all the time and alienating half of their customers. So it does make sense why any business should just focus on the green.
You'd think so, because otherwise you're going to lose customers. They're not shy, the Black Rifle Coffee Company. Here's what they said. I'm going to have to clean this up because our show is rated G for general audiences. This is what they said. They tweeted this, or they put it on it's a post on the company's blog about the immigration ban. Hipster Bucks, that's what they call it. They don't call it Starbucks. They call it Hipster Bucks. brews burnt bad coffee, we'll call it. And they add a bunch of sugar, foam, cream, and sprinkle a side of other junk on the top to mask the taste of the junk. Mixed into each cup comes a convoluted ingredient of anti-American and anti-constitutionalism fluff that has seemed to further the entitlement of the millennial generation. That is according to the Black Rifle Coffee Company. So they're not pulling any punches in their takedown of Starbucks.
Oh, that's awesome. It just cracks me up. You can just taste the anti-Americanism in the coffee. They have been just constantly coming out. They're Seattle-based, and they have them pretty much every block in Seattle. So they're just basically conforming with their headquarters area. But still, why does a coffee company need to have a say in hiring refugees, just blatantly trying to defy the government, or, you know, putting out certain colored cups at different times to convey different symbols? It just, there's no point to it. And so in a way, it's kind of refreshing to see someone smack them in the mouth a little bit.
They've kind of had, I think, a few missteps, Starbucks, lately. They did the, didn't they like want to strike up, they wanted the baristas to strike up a conversation about race with the customers.
That's just unbelievably stupid.
That's a really bad idea. You're going to have problems, inevitably. People don't want to talk about it. I don't. It never happened to me. I don't know what I would do if a barista had said, "What do you think about, you know?" I'd be like, "What?"
You just say, "I'm white. You're black. It's a skin color. Let's move on." Just, it's that simple.
Let's just have some coffee here and move on. So anyway, they've been reaching out into the political realm, and I don't know if that'll and the getting into some of these societal issues. But at the end of the day, I think coffee's about. People either like the flavor or they, you know, something. And I don't think it has anything to do with politics, but trying to make it about that.
Imagine how nervous some of the baristas must have been if they knew they had to bring up race to almost every customer. I would be terrified to work there if I had to do something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
for
now.
For sure. And right. Because a lot of the employees wouldn't want to do it. They'd be like, "Oh, I don't want to get into this." I don't know what I would do. You know, if you were forced to do it, I'd probably just be like, "So, how about all that racial stuff? Well, here's your coffee. Enjoy your day." Just go back to the... Not really give them a chance to say anything.
Yeah.
That would be tough. You'd have to feel for the employees, because even though a company may, like the ownership or the CEO or whatever, he might have a real specific political leaning. Not all the employees do, I don't think. Maybe they have to write on their application what they think, but I don't think that's the case.
It's getting close, though. It does seem like we're so divided that people with different political beliefs can't coexist anymore, and so it's almost like a requirement that everyone has to be in lockstep.
Yeah.
At least if you're a leftist, it seems like you have to have absolute conformity within the ranks.
I'm envisioning a scene like out of from West Side Story where you go from the Black Rifle Coffee Company. You accidentally walk into Starbucks carrying your Black Rifle Coffee Company mug, and everyone stops and looks at you. It's like rival gangs.
And then they start dancing and kicking their way towards you while they sing. They're being very aggressive.
"I don't know who's... this isn't even my cup. We've seen you over there.
Traitor."
I've never seen this company. I guess they are more of like the coffee subscription club. So they probably don't have too many stores, or if they do, I don't know about them. But that would be awkward. You have a Starbucks across from a Black Rifle Coffee Company, and sitting outside of the one, you've got everybody in like the bikers with the American flag bandanas. On the other side, it's the more of the hipster crowd and
the tight jeans.
Yeah,
the unique glasses frames.
Yeah,
purple hair.
If it came down to an actual fisticuffs, I think I'd rather be over at the Black Rifle Coffee Company. That side, I think they probably fare better in that. But
they might also be locked and loaded, just because of the name of the place.
yeah. It would make you wonder. I don't know that I would stop at a place like that. I don't think of guns and coffee as coexisting, but maybe they do in some way.
Just seems like a hotbed of potential conflict. Maybe would be wise to stay away.
Just steer clear of it. Yeah. What does Folgers think? The best part of waking up, racial discussion in your cup.
Yeah, as far as I know, they've been pretty quiet. They're just sitting back and letting these companies destroy themselves with political activism.
Let them fight it out.
Yeah.
Kia David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Richard Palmer today filling in for your regular host, Stephen Fleury. That's from Edstone, England. and the Trumpet Hour program with your host, Joel Hilliker. All of that and more on today's lineup for KPCG. Lots of great programming there. Check those out. And you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm or thetrumpet.com if you can't catch it live. A couple of the headlines from thetrumpet.com today. Germany, the not-so-timid leader. Donald Trump must act to end Iran's plan to seize control of the Middle East. British naval power after Brexit. And more than half of the U.S. Navy aircraft grounded. That and a lot more content at thetrumpet.com today. Check it out. Grant, you've got a story for us here. Californians foot $25,000 bill for 40 hours of holders' anti-Trump time. Pays to be a lawyer.
Yeah, sure does. It would seem like the way the state is going now, probably a lot of Californians would be fine with this. But again, why are the taxpayers having to pay $25,000 a month for former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder's law firm to come in and try to strategize for clashes with the Trump administration? That's what he's doing. He's there helping basically socialist state governor Jerry Brown resist Mr. Trump in every way possible, of course, with their environmental beliefs and illegal immigration beliefs. They're just looking to openly defy the government. And this guy's making quite a lot of money, $25,000 a month for just 40 hours of work in a month. That's how much Eric Holder is making off of this.
Would you find yourself to be extremely happy if you got a check in the mail for 25 grand every month or just deposited into your account?
Yes.
It would certainly be a perk.
That
would
be a life changer.
Yeah. That would change things if you could get that kind of cash for this type of work. But it is interesting to see just some of the pricing of the law. I mean, lawyers are expensive, I guess, yeah. Especially if they're good. And, if you're representing a state, they've obviously got some deep pockets, so he's going to be doing okay.
Yeah, especially if you're representing a state and the leaders of that state have no qualms about taking as much money from the taxpayers as possible. California is already one of the very most expensive places to live, causing a mass exodus to places like Texas where the government does not try to overreach into people's lives necessarily. But here they are. They're hiring Eric Holder, who, when he was the U.S. Attorney General, actually was the first ever U.S. Attorney General to be held in contempt of Congress on civil and criminal grounds. This was back in 2012, relating to the Operation Fast and Furious scandal, mm-hmm. where they basically gave guns to drug cartels. I believe that's what it was. And they kind of let them disperse and then see what happened. I don't really know what their goal was there, but it ended up killing people.
I think they try to confuse people by naming it after a movie.
Yeah, I was like, that's kind of cool. I don't know why this is such a scandal.
Is this about cars? Is Vin Diesel in this? Yeah, that is sort of a lot of that stuff was kind of murky. Like, now what exactly happened? But they did get in some trouble for it. And I think it's just interesting because this highlights there's quite a few people that are kind of in the mix on these types of things where they may really politically have this stance where they think that everything that, say, the conservatives are doing is wrong, or I think of, like, say, Al Sharpton. You know, maybe he's really, you know, into the race thing. He really believes it. But you can't help but realize that they make a ton of money off of it as well. So, you know, maybe it's that is their deeply held belief, their different stances on things, but they're also getting paid a lot for it. So you do have to wonder at some point where that line is between, no, that's their deeply held belief, or it's a convenient way for me to make a ton of money.
Yeah, deeply held radical beliefs that make them rich, even while at the same time the radical left is openly hostile toward rich people. So if they're getting rich off of these beliefs, clearly they're also creating loopholes for themselves to keep more of their money while they penalize other rich people. Not themselves with their policies, but other rich people. So there's a lot of hypocrisy here. Eric Holder is basically a non-convicted criminal because he basically politicized his office as the U.S. Attorney General, wouldn't turn over the documents about that Fast and Furious scandal, wouldn't cooperate with investigations that basically differed from him ideologically. So he really did a lot as well, undermining law enforcement while he was Attorney General. So this is the guy that California is hiring to opposed President Trump at every turn.
It's interesting because, you know, you talk about socialism or some of these different ideas, and if you look at countries that really are totally into that, there's always somebody at the top, though, that has a ton of money. And you see it even in this country where there's these different movements, and they all kind of, I guess, are leftist movements. And, you know, on some level, they talk about, like you said, they talk against the 1% or the wealthy and this and that. But then some of the people leading these movements are just loaded and making a lot of money off of the movements. And it just seems a little hypocritical.
It does. Yeah. And the other interesting thing is historically, political forces like socialism and communism have never sprouted up from nothing. They've always leached off the capitalist system and taken all the gains from that, hoarded it at the top, and then controlled everything from that point on. That's what's always happened. It's not an organic movement. It's about overthrowing the current system and then going from there, basically where the people at the top really have all the power. It's amazing how the radical left complains about rich people now, and yet they want 10 times, 50 times, 100 times more power than that once they actually take office.
You can read the rest of that at Fox News if you'd like to. Californians foot $25,000 bill for 40 hours of holders' anti-Trump time. You're pretty good with the math. What is that per hour? It's a lot.
Oh, that's probably $2,500 for 4 hours, so almost $1,000 per hour. It's about $600 per hour. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. The just as a side note, unrelated to that, while we were doing the program today for part of it, my daughter was in. She was kind of roaming around until she got picked up. But she made a drawing for me and put it over by my workspace here. And I didn't really see it until right now. And she's really trying to, you know, get good at drawing faces and things. But right now it's not totally working out. And I just looked down and almost fell out of my chair. It scared me to death. That this may be a threat. This may be a threatening note that was left to me. That is a scary face. Anyway,
it looks like boulders falling from the sky on top of somebody. I can't really see it too well from here.
It's supposed to be flowers.
Oh, I see.
I don't know. I always kid with I joke with my kids. I say, I appreciate this drawing, but are you threatening me in some way? Like, what does this mean?
This is ghoulish.
But you got to start somewhere. You got to try. Faces are very hard to draw. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your Wednesday, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.